Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Thanks so much for listening. It is The Drive. My name is Carrington Harrison, Sports Machine Sean Levine, Brandon Kiley on the ones and twos. Coming up in 10 minutes, we will go inside the mind of the machine. We'll do that coming up at about 3:15 or so. Today's pop quiz was Spider-Man Far From Home. BK, why'd you pick it?
Yeah, the future of Spider-Man is a little bit unclear right now. There's some battling going on between Disney and Sony, and so technically Spider-Man is no longer part of the Marvel character universe. I'm guessing that's going to change when Disney puts their foot down.
I read a little bit about it yesterday, but I'm not the biggest Marvel head in the world, and Marvel fans are kind of like soccer fans. Like, you can't speak not knowledgeably about their product, or they'll get really angry with you. This is all I think about it. This is all I really want to say about it. I can't do another Spider-Man reboot. I can't do it. This latest one is good. No, these are good. I can't do a let's tell you the story about Uncle Ben all over again. We know he died. With great power comes great responsibility. We know about the radioactive spider body. I can't do that storyline anymore. They got to pick another storyline to tell me.
From a guy who's seen, what, three different versions of Spider-Man this year that I know of? Like, there was the new Spider-Man movie. There was the Lego Spider-Man movie, right? Like,
Spider-Verse 2.
Spider-Verse 2. You saw them all, didn't you?
No, I did not see the most recent Marvel movie. The Into the Spider-Verse is dope, though. Like, that's a really, really good movie. So as long as that's intact, which I asked one of my Marvel heads, and he said that's going to be untouched, I'm all for it. I'm just saying, is if they're going to... So this Tom Holland character, who I did see the one before the most recent one, I really enjoyed it. I can't take them starting Spider-Man over. Like, I can't do it. I can't do any more Uncle Ben. I can't do any more of that story. You got to tell me a new story with Spider-Man. You've told me that story a million times.
Are Marvel heads real things? I've heard of cheeseheads. Oh, I've heard of potheads. Marvel heads are a real thing?
Yeah, like this one. It's the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I apologize. I got that wrong.
Oh, okay. So there's a Marvel head right there on the protein house in the Purple Text line.
Do you think you become the most successful movie in the history of the world without having people that are hardcore about your product? Like, more people saw Avengers than any movie they've ever made in the history of the world in the movie theater. Like, there's people that are serious. Think about it. They've made their, what, now movie 23 in the Marvel Universe? Yeah, they're people that are very serious about their Marvel. Very, very serious.
It outdid Avatar, did it not?
Yeah, it did. It did outdo Avatar.
And every other movie that's ever been made.
I never saw Avatar.
Coming out, coming up in just a little bit, we will go inside the mind of the machine. So, if you have not been keeping up, I completely understand. The Cowboys are basically the NFC version of the Chiefs when it comes to contract extension. So, think about it. They got to pay their quarterback. Chiefs got to pay their quarterback at some point. They have a star offensive player who they have to pay. The Chiefs have a star offensive player that they have to pay. And then there's another star offensive player that the Cowboys have to pay. And now the Chiefs don't have to pay another one. But there's three people the Chiefs need to pay. And there's three people that the Cowboys need to pay. And yesterday, somebody skipped the line. Jalen Smith, who plays linebacker for the Cowboys, he got paid yesterday. And Jerry Jones basically said what we all know. In a salary cap league, when one person gets paid, that means there is a smaller piece of the pie for the other guys on their roster. Here is the general manager of the Dallas Cowboys.
I did ask Jerry.
Never mind. This is Jane Slater repeating what the general manager of the Cowboys had to say.
Jones, that now that Jalen Smith has a slice of the pie, what does that mean for the others? And he said with laughter, look, it means there's left pie left. Make no bones about that. But then after he stepped out into the podium and was in the hallway, and a reporter asked him about those Zeke Who comments that he made after the Rams game and the rookie Tony Pollard's performance. Jerry was not laughing when he said this. He said he had not talked to Zeke after his camp went on the record and called them disrespectful. In fact, he said, look, I've earned the right to joke with Zeke, period. I've earned that right. So that's where things stand.
Let me ask you guys this. Maybe I'm wrong in this, and BK, I know you're the salary cap expert guy. Is this not the contract that Ezekiel Elliott should have been offered? 5 years, $64 million, $35.5 million guaranteed. It sounds like Ezekiel Elliott said no to this contract, or this is the contract that he wants. And then Jerry Jones gave that contract to a linebacker in Jalen Smith and then didn't give it to Amari Cooper or Ezekiel Elliott. Obviously, there's no way Dak Prescott signs that contract. Am I missing anything in that belief?
I think Zeke probably would have requested a little bit more than that, but I still understand your point, whether it's we're going to pay this guy or we're going to pay another guy. And I understand your Chiefs comparison where the Chiefs have a few guys to pay and they paid Frank Clark this offseason. The crazy thing to me is how close the money's actually going to be. Let's do a quick experiment here if we can, guys. How much do you think Zeke wants per year? Just give me a number, just something
14.
Random. Okay, so we'll call it 15 a year. How much do we think Dak's going to want a year?
35.
And how much do we
think? Between 30 and 35.
So let's call it 35. How much do we think Amari's going to want per year?
19 to 21.
Okay, so we'll call it 20 to make the math easy on me. Let's add that up real quick. 35 and 15, we got 50 plus 20. So that's $70 million per year for those three guys. Let's do the same thing with the Chiefs. How much do we think Chris Jones wants?
20.
How much do we think Patrick Mahomes is going to end up getting? We'll call it 40.
35.
35, 40 to be safe?
35 to 40.
Okay, let's call it 35. And Tyreek Hill is eventually going to get what?
Same as Amari Cooper, 20. 19 to 21.
Okay, so we'll call it 20. It's the same. That's what's crazy is when you add it up, the Chiefs are going to end up paying their three players about the same, if not a little bit less now they add it up, than the Cowboys are going to. And the Cowboys are a team that you could debate maybe the best in the division. Maybe they're going to make the playoffs. Maybe they're a 10-win football team. And then you've got the Chiefs, who everybody and their mama thinks are in a great position, not just to win the division again, but to win a championship. It's crazy to think that both of these teams are going to the negotiating table and the different situations they're actually in going forward.
I think they couldn't also be in different positions just based on who's negotiating the contracts. I don't think that it is possible to have two owners that are more on polar opposite when it comes to their public perception. We agree. There is not an owner in the NFL who is more public than Jerry Jones, right? We agree. He does radio interviews once a week. He is the owner and general manager. He is the face. The stadium is called Jerry World. We don't call it Cowboy Stadium or AT&T Stadium. It is called Jerry World. He's very front and center. We agree with the Dallas Cowboys. I don't think you can have an owner who is less or more private than what Clark Hunt is. Don't really see him a whole lot. He only talks to the media one or two times a year before training camp, one time before the season. He'll talk one time during the season, one time at the end. I don't think it's really possible. I think part of why the Chiefs contract negotiations and the Cowboys is the Cowboys have some higher-end players who are up. Like, we agree, Ezekiel Elliott's higher up the food chain of NFL players in terms of Chris Jones.
Yeah.
And Jerry Jones just handles it more private, or excuse me, more publicly than Clark Hunt would handle it. You would never get Clark Hunt on the record to say Tyreek who or Chris who or Pat who. Jerry Jones is that kind of guy. And then yesterday when he's announcing the Jalen Smith contract, he says, well, you guys have been telling me to make a contract story. Here's a contract story. Like, part of why these two things are different, because the people who handle them and the people who eventually have to sign the checks could not be different in their personality.
I think it's funny. I love what Jerry Jones is doing. He's having a little bit of fun, and maybe it's at the expense of some of his players. But as he said, he's earned the right to mess with these guys. Aren't we being a little bit too sensitive? Like, do you think Ezekiel Elliott really thinks that because a guy in training camp or in a preseason game looked good and the owner noticed it, that it's going to matter for his money going forward? He's having a little bit of fun with them.
I think it matters because I think it's very clear that Jerry Jones is negotiating in the public. I think it's very obvious. The Dak Prescott thing, when the magically one day we found out Dak Prescott wanted $40 million. The Zeke who after the I think part of their frustration is our owner clearly uses the media to get his message out there, where we agree players just don't have the same luxury, at least not at the level of Jerry Jones, who might be the second most powerful person in the NFL behind Roger Goodell.
You say it's obvious that he's doing it in the public. What's obvious to me is that each one of these teams have one guy that they have to pay, and the two other guys, there's question marks about. Like, the Chiefs are going to pay Patrick Mahomes. I don't know what the exact date's going to be. I don't know what the final number's going to be on the check, but I can tell you this. They are going to pay Patrick Mahomes. I think eventually that's how the story is going to end with Ezekiel Elliott. Is it going to be today, tomorrow, or 6 weeks into the season? I don't know. But I can tell you the Cowboys recognize his importance to the team. When it comes to the four other guys, Chris Jones and Tyreek Hill on the Chiefs, Dak Prescott and Amari Cooper on the Cowboys, there's question marks with those guys. Do we want to lock them up for long term? Obviously, in the case of Tyreek Hill, you've got the off-field questions. Was it a career year for Chris Jones? Is that what he really is? I think that's the question both teams have to ask themselves. Which guy do we have to pay versus which guys do we want to pay? And in the case of the Chiefs, it's Pat. In the case of the Cowboys, at some point, it's going to be Ezekiel Elliott.
I want to ask you this question really quickly before we go inside the mind of the machine when I was looking at the Cowboys. Now, this is going to be Buzz Killington, maybe in its purest form.
This Jalen Smith guy, isn't that one of Will Smith's kids?
No, it is not one of him. Jaden Smith is actually Will Smith's kid's name.
All right.
The Cowboys just played a linebacker, right?
Mm-hmm.
They had the opportunity to pay another linebacker in Anthony Hitchens, right? Remember, he was a free agent. They had a chance to pay him, and they said, no, we are not going to pay you. We are going to do it the old-fashioned way. So they went out and they drafted Leighton Vander Esch, who turned into one of the best linebackers in the NFL. Jalen Smith, they took a little bit of a chance on given his injury history, but he has certainly paid dividends. I'm happy for the kid. He got paid, and they now rewarded him with a massive contract. It seems like the Cowboys did it the way you're supposed to do it. They had a player in Anthony Hitchens that they didn't really believe in. They thought that they could get younger and cheaper at the position, and then they got younger and cheaper at the position. Where the Chiefs maybe reached a little bit on Anthony Hitchens, felt like he was the missing piece for their defense. They went and brought him, and he has not fit into the defense the way that they had anticipated. That's kind of how I see this Cowboys thing. We agree, out of those three linebackers, the Chiefs have the worst of the three. You much rather have Jalen Smith, you much rather have Leighton Vander Esch than have Anthony Hitchens in his contract.
You calling Anthony Hitchens fool's gold?
Yeah. I think last year, based on the contract that he signed, he's fool's gold.
I'm with you. That's what I would call him also. Now, again, I'm going to give him an opportunity to watch him play right in front of me the same way that I will for Kendall Fuller. Because I thought, quite frankly, the bill of goods that I was sold for both those guys, they were going to be better players than they were a year ago. New scheme, new defense coordinator, new opportunities. I'm holding out hope. I'm not sure why for both Hitchens and Kendall Fuller this season.
I just think that we see when it comes to these situations, and I understand that every free agency, like, there's a reason why Seattle didn't want to pay Frank Clark. Now, maybe their reason was we can't pay everybody. He's a salary cap casualty. We can't do it. Maybe that exact same thing happened with Anthony Hitchens, that they looked and they saw, hey, Zeke's coming up, Dak's coming up, Amari Cooper's coming up. We can't pay Anthony Hitchens. We got to start freeing up some of this cap space. Or it could be they kind of saw the writing on the wall, was like, hey, we got our chance to get out of this contract. We don't think he's worthy of this second deal. Let's go out and draft his replacement and have him on a rookie deal. That's what it seems like they did. They drafted two better players than them, and now they're rewarding one of them with the contract that I assume is going to be beneficial to them. And then Leighton Vander Esch is now in year two of his deal, and they'll get a couple more years out of that before they got to make a decision.
Hitchens did lead the Chiefs in tackles last year, so he was productive there. How much better do you think he'll be this year than he was a season ago, or do you think that was the real Anthony Hitchens?
I don't think we have the answer to the question because of the scheme change that they're going through right now, but I would say the scheme change of the way they've tried to sell it, there is no player that should benefit more from the scheme change than Anthony Hitchens this upcoming season. Coming up in about 20 minutes, I think I have found the perfect comparison for Darwin Thompson. I'll tell you who it is first, but let's go inside the mind of the machine. We'll do that next. Coming up is The Draft.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
Back in on The Drive, coming up in about 10 minutes or so, I have a new comparison for Darwin Thompson. We'll get into it coming up in just a little bit. Plus, Phillip Rivers is making the case for himself to be in the Hall of Fame. You know there's nothing I love more than a good Phillip Rivers should be in the Hall of Fame debate. We'll do that coming up in about 30 minutes. But before we do all that, let's go inside the mind of the machine.
You done?
Yep. How do you get it out?
The NFL officially revealed its team names and logos today, guys, including the
XFL.
What'd I say?
NFL, but it's fine.
I meant the XFL. Thanks, BK. St. Louis Battlehawks are one of the teams. The Seattle Dragons. I like that one. Seattle Dragons. The Houston Roughnecks and the Los Angeles Wildcats. Which one of those don't belong? C-Dot, how long does the NFL stick around for this time? And is there a market for pro football outside of the NFL?
If the NFL is not going to be a feeder system or embrace them, no. There's no chance that this league works for more than a year. The funniest part about this, it's not just the names of the teams. It's their descriptions of the teams.
The Battlehawks, the Dragons, the Roughnecks, and the Wildcats.
So, like, listen to this. No, listen. So this is the Houston Roughnecks. Resolute, rippling with heat, railing against fatigue, unceasing and often unseen. They labor deep in the trenches, mercenaries in the muck, brawlers in black and dirt.
Damn.
Not just for 3 hours, not just when the lights are bright. These are the scratching, the grinding, the never bending few. The Houston Roughnecks going to work for you. Click here to learn more.
All that before they ever play a game.
That's the team, the Houston Roughnecks. Goodness gracious.
By the way, Landry.
Who wrote this? The people that write this are writing the greatest stories for the WWE, and we are absolutely missing them. Resolute, rippling with heat, railing against fatigue, unceasing, laboring deep in the trenches.
Your Houston Roughnecks.
The Houston Roughnecks, bruh.
There's one player in the league that signed. Do you know who it is?
Landry Jones. Yeah, Landry Jones. I saw that a couple days ago.
Is the one player in the league. BK, more likely to make the playoffs this year, the Colts or the Ravens?
I hate this question. This is a good one. I will go with the Colts because I think their division's a little bit weaker. I'm worried about the Ravens' defense more than their offense. I actually think their offense has a chance to be pretty good, and I think that at worst it's going to be average. Their defense worries me. They lost a lot of talent on that side of the ball. I have no idea who's rushing the passer for them this year. So as down as I am on the Colts, I still think they're probably more likely to make the playoffs than the Ravens.
C-Dot more likely to make the playoffs, Falcons or Cowboys this year?
I'm going to pick the Falcons right now because of the uncertainty about the Dallas Cowboys. I think the Cowboys are a better team. I like their roster more. It's hard to say that when I don't know when their best player is going to play on the team. It's very difficult to pick them to make the playoffs given the information I currently have.
See, now you may be the only person talking about this, but the U.S. men's national basketball team is actually going to try to defend their gold medal in next month's World Cup in China. Who knew? What happened to USA basketball? Here's your roster. Harrison Barnes, Jaylen Brown, Joe Harris, Brooke Lopez, Mason Plumlee, a couple other dudes, and whatever a Derek White is. What's happened to USA basketball? And who does Derek White play for?
I don't think that anything happened to U.S. basketball. This just doesn't matter. If this was the Olympic team, I think it would be a big deal. This is the World Cup team. This means absolutely nothing.
Joe Harris and Mason Plumlee are on the squad.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that we've seen that the stars of NBA basketball don't really care about this. And then when it comes to the Olympics, when we agree everybody is watching the Olympics, then they'll show up and play. So based on right now, I agree with you, it does not look good how it currently looks right now. But let's factor in, this does not count. We know they're going to qualify for the Olympics, and we know their star players are going to play in the Olympics. That's all that matters.
Guys, today would have been Wilt the Stilt Chamberlain's 83rd birthday. What's the crazier stat? The fact that Wilt once averaged 50 points per game in a season? The fact he once averaged 23 rebounds per game in a season? Or the fact that he claims he slept with over 20,000 women in his lifetime? Which stat, when it comes to Wilt Chamberlain, blows your mind the most?
I mean, all of them are completely ridiculous. All of them are just like mythological creature-ish. So I think it's like hard to pick one of them. I mean, the fact that you average 50 and 25 in an NBA season, I mean, you couldn't do that on NBA 2K20. Like, I don't even know how that's possible for you to average 50. And think about what level of basketball would you, Sean Levine, have to play to do that?
Third grade? I think third
Second
grade.
Second grade? He was doing this against grown men. I'm saying is you don't think you could do this against eighth grade kids.
Oh, hell no.
You don't think you could do this against seventh grade kids. You'd have to play against five-year-old kids on a seven-foot goal to average 50 and 25. Wilt was doing this at the highest level of basketball. Insane.
I mean, to be fair.
Come on, BK. You know what? It has to be 20,000, right?
Yeah. Well, okay. That's the answer.
Okay.
Also, I mean, he was doing it from 1960 to 1965 when he was averaging this many rebounds.
When you say he was doing it, are we talking about the rebounds, the points, or the it?
Fair clarification. I was talking about the rebounds.
Okay.
He was 7'1". Everybody else in the league was like 6'2". So as incredible as it was, it's a little different than the NBA in 2019. I think the latter is obviously the number of women that he claims to have slept with. That is the most impressive number.
Do the math, or don't, but it's several per day in his lifetime.
Really quickly, before we move on talking about Wilt Chamberlain, This is maybe the best audio that we have.
Did Wilt Chamberlain or Danny Manning ever, you know, they were on the cover of Sports Illustrated, have they reached out to Wiggins at all?
Wilt's dead. Danny may have.
I was at that press conference.
That lady asked Bill Self, did Wilt Chamberlain reach out?
Bill's
to
like, it's been a while since we spoke.
My goodness.
No, he has
That's
not
so
reached
funny,
out to me.
Man,
what's the consensus, C-Dot, on the better chicken sandwich, Popeyes or Chick-fil-A?
I don't know if there is a consensus.
Why
at
is
least
Popeyes just now introduced a chicken sandwich?
I don't know, man. The streets is needed, man. Streets was desperate, man. Streets was dry out here. Football season right around the corner. They had to shake the game up a little bit. This is the thing. I actually think the Popeyes sandwich is better than the Chick-fil-A sandwich. But the way the Chick-fil-A sandwich is packaged is just perfect. Like, it's quick, it's hot, it's efficient, the bun's perfect, the chicken's perfect, you can put the sauce, you get the little waffle fries, you get the A-plus lemonade, but the sandwich from Popeyes...
And the pickles.
The sandwich from Popeyes was a strong contender here. I mean, we're talking like Xbox, PlayStation 4 here. We're talking, it's just a matter of preference when it comes
to... C-Dot ruined it by putting mayo on it. That was the problem.
I didn't put any mayo, that's how it comes.
Yeah, well, they need to not do that.
I didn't add anything to either sandwich. I just gave it to you. How
I saw that you
bag.
Can get, you have the option of either you can do the mayo or the spicy like chipotle sauce that you can have.
Oh, I just said, I just said throw me four of those sandwiches and put them in a bag. I didn't have any special requests.
I just want to know how it's taken Popeyes this long, a chicken place, to come up with a chicken sandwich. Like that was some innovative
it's
idea
fair question.
When they reinvented the wheel. The three best places to get fried chicken in Kansas City, just in my humble opinion, Stroud's, Red Door Grill, and a place nobody's heard of called O'Neill's. Guys,
I'm going to say this. If those are your three places, you are the whitest person I've ever talked
and
to
I may
in my
just
entire
be.
Life. Because, I mean, you got zero flavor in any of those chicken.
I've heard Brookside Poultry is pretty good.
You've never been to Wings Cafe? You've never been to JJ's over on Prospect? You never been to JJ's with the little crack sauce? They literally call it...
It's called like, crack sauce?
Okay.
All right. I pass on crack and crack sauce every single time. You're telling me crack sauce is a real thing and a good thing?
We can go get some today. They put that crack seasoning all over your wings. I'm trying to tell you here. That's how I know you. That's how I know you're not going past 12th Street, 13th Street. If those are your three, what was the one? O'Brien's? What kind of place?
O'Neill's.
What kind of good chicken's place is called
it's
O'Neill's?
It's over on
talking about Jay's Fish and Chicken.
95th.
Yeah,
Mission.
JJ's. That's what we call it. JJ's.
It's just J's, though.
No, it's JJ's.
He adds a J.
I know what you're saying. It's JJ's.
He's so comfortable with the place. He actually adds a J.
You
to
even
it.
Have Go Chicken Go on the list. You got
I went
O'Brien's.
There once.
You got O'Neill's. O'Brien's. What
it's
kind
a hole
of place
in the
is
wall.
That?
I'll say, there wasn't a whole lot of people that looked like me when I walked in.
They definitely put parsley on the chicken over there at O'Neill's.
Who the hell puts parsley on their chicken?
Over at O'Neill's. That's what they do.
The official college football over-unders are out. Why is MU, guys, you guys are, the right guys to ask, have such variation? I saw on one site the over-under 6.5, which I would run to the bank for. The other one had them at 8. Why such variation when it comes to MU football this season?
I'm not going to lie to you. I do not have the answer to this question. But if there's a place right now that is taking money for Missouri 6.5, let me know because I'm happy to invest at your gambling casino, your book, or whatever. Because Missouri is winning more than 6 games this year. I feel very confident. Just like how I'm confident the Chiefs are going to win more than 9 games, I'm very confident that the Chiefs are going to, or excuse me, that Missouri is going to win more than 6 games.
Yeah, it's an unbelievable over-under. It is the gift from Vegas if you can find this anywhere that you can actually bet on it. The problem is, I don't think you can find this anywhere that you can actually bet on it because everywhere where you can, it's somewhere between 7.5 and 8.5. And I still feel really good about the over 7.5, but over 6 is just an outrageous number to be able to get whenever you're looking at Mizzou's schedule this year.
Coming up in just a little bit, I have a new comparison for Darwin Thompson. I'll share it with you coming up. It's The Drive.
The Drive, 610 Sports Radio.
Back in on The Drive, coming up in about 10 minutes, Phillip Rivers is making a case for himself to be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. We'll play for you what he had to say coming up in just a little bit. We'll also get back into the Chiefs here, but first, let's tell you about something we're doing cool.
Yeah, coming up on August 30th, it's Rivalry Renewed 2 at Hy-Vee Arena, and it just got a little bigger. K-State and Arkansas have added teams, so Rivalry Renewed 2 will now feature 4 teams in 2 games. And don't forget about the VIP party that's coming up on Thursday, August 29th at Repeal 18th. CDOT will be hosting live down there, answering some live question and answer. That'll be a lot of fun with CDOT. For more information and to purchase your tickets, go to 610sports.com.
What am I doing? I didn't even know what I was doing. I don't
know.
You're hosting something. I didn't even know.
And Repeal 18th, CDOT, on August 29th.
I had no clue what I was doing.
That's Thursday, August 29th. Well, I'm glad that I read this then.
I just found out what it was doing. Yeah. I was confused on what my responsibilities were once you started.
Let me try it again. You're going to be down there hosting a live Q&A from Repeal 18th on August 29th.
That is true. Coming up in a little bit, we'll play for you Phillip Rivers making his case on why he should be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So today I was thinking of yesterday. I went on Shop Talk with the guys from the Midday Show.
Mm-hmm.
And Ryan Wachowski from Fesco in the Morning was saying that he thinks that Darwin Thompson could be a number one running back in the NFL. And my thing was, I don't think he can be a number one running back in the NFL. When I think of his size, I don't know if that really puts you in the number one running back. Not saying that you can't be a productive running back in the NFL. I just didn't think that you could be a number one running back in the NFL at his size. So, BK, he has mastered Pro Football Reference in a way that I have not mastered it. So we looked up running backs in the NFL. This is between 5 feet and 6 feet. And I believe between 180 and 200 pounds, right? Somewhere in that range? That
close enough.
All right, that's close enough.
It's a very wide range. As long as you're between 5 feet and 6 feet, 100
5
to 200
feet and 5'9" is what I did, and 195 to 205. Okay. So it's a little more specific, but it's close enough.
All right, I just wanted to be sure. I wanted to try to say I was saying it accurately. These are some of the guys that were on the list. Tariq Cohen, who we've heard a comparison for Darwin Thompson. Deion Lewis, I believe Lewis Riddick was the one that made it. Philip Lindsay plays for the Denver Broncos, also went undrafted. Kind of can understand given his size, but he also would fit in this. He is 5'8", 190 pounds. Amir Abdullah, who has now played for multiple teams, he fits in this range. Theo Riddick, Jaquez Rogers, Darren Sproles. So we can think of some running backs who have been really productive in the NFL, but maybe haven't been number one running backs. Giovanni Bernard is certainly a guy that kind of fits in this category. So I was looking and I was looking. I was trying to find someone. I'm like, who could I find who has maybe been a number one running back in the NFL that kind of fits in this category? You know who we landed on?
Who?
Devontae Freeman. What if Darwin Thompson turns into Devontae Freeman? If you play fantasy football, you certainly know who Devontae Freeman is, played for the Atlanta Falcons. So Darwin Thompson at the combine weighed in at 5'8", 200 pounds. Devontae Freeman weighed in at the combine at 5'8", 205 pounds. Basically the same guy. I think that Devontae Freeman is a realistic ceiling, a realistic expectation. If you want to be a number one running back in the NFL, Devontae Freeman seems to be a good comparison.
I would take that all day long. Now, Devontae Freeman, how many times has he been a feature back like you're talking about versus splitting carries? Because almost all these other guys that you mentioned, none of them were just a single feature running back like Ezekiel Elliott or Saquon Barkley.
I guess I would say, though, and sorry to cut you off.
You're good.
Those guys are elite-level running backs. I'm with you. I don't think Darwin Thompson is ever Ezekiel Elliott or Saquon Barkley. Saquon Barkley was also the second pick in the NFL draft, and Ezekiel Elliott was the top five pick in the NFL draft. So I'm with you. It will probably be a Devontae Freeman, Tevin Coleman situation in Atlanta. So it's Darwin Thompson and it's Damian Williams, and it's a 1A, 1B situation. Neither one is greater than the other.
We have seen feature running backs, though, at that size, whether it was Maurice Jones-Drew, he held up for several years, Ray Rice, even a guy like Emmitt Smith, that surprised me, I checked it out, was only 5'9". Barry Sanders was 5'8". And don't get it twisted, I am not comparing Darwin Thompson to any of those dudes. I'm just talking about their size. Can he be a feature running back in the NFL one day? Based on the way that he's played so far in camp and a couple of preseason games, which is a very small sample size, I guess my answer has to be yes. I obviously want to see a lot more, but the Chiefs are in a very advantageous situation this year. As Chiefs fans, we've gotten used to feature running backs, whether it was Larry Johnson or Priest Holmes or Kareem Hunt or Jamal Charles. That's not the case this year. The Chiefs are going to divide carries, and I think they're in a good situation. Not a great one with their running backs, but Damian Williams, I think, can do close to what he did last year in limited time, and Darwin Thompson looks like a good second option right now. Now, if he becomes your first option, I'm going to change my story a little bit, but right now, as your second option, not too bad.
But we agree, those guys that you listed, now some of them are Hall of Famers, Barry Sanders, Emmitt Smith, the other guys, we agree those are the exceptions and not the rules when it comes to the size, and it's much more likely that you become Giovanni Bernard. It's much more likely that you become Theo Riddick. It's much more likely that you become Jaquez Rogers, who are those kind of fast, scat-back kind of players that you don't want to touch the ball 150 times that can help you in multiple ways. I'm not saying that he can't become Ray Rice. I'm saying is that's probably like for every Ray Rice, there are way more of these guys who are in that Deion Lewis, Tariq Cohen that can, again, touch the ball 125 times, help you a little bit in the passing game, and if you have another 1B running back, can be really productive. Because I made the example on the midday show, like Alvin Kamara is not too much bigger than Darwin Thompson. Like Alvin Kamara is like an inch or two taller and like 10 to 15 pounds a little bit bigger. But I think the Saints have clearly said we don't want him to be a traditional number one running back. We're not giving him the ball 200 times. We know that how we get the best out of Alvin Kamara is giving him the ball 10 to 15 times and allowing him to be explosive and keeping him upright. Now, obviously, that's the extreme, and Alvin Kamara might be a one-of-a-kind player in the NFL. I think that's how you have to use players the size of Darwin Thompson.
From Darwin Thompson's perspective, his mind would be blown if he knew we were even having this conversation. Because just think about a few months ago when the Chiefs drafted him out of Utah State in the fifth round. They knew Damian Williams was going to be their feature back. They knew they had Darrell Williams. Then they went out and signed a guy in Carlos Hyde. The plan with Darwin Williams was to get him into this offense slowly. Like, if you want to compare him to the other Chiefs draft picks, I think that they drafted Juan Thornhill to play right away. I think they drafted Mecole Hardman to maybe not play right away, but to at least be a part of the 2019 Chiefs. I don't think that was ever the case with Darwin Thompson. I think he's so far ahead of the curve. He's played so well in camp, played so well in the first couple of preseason games, that he hasn't gave this team any choice but to make him the number two running back. There's a lot of guys that get their position because of how much money they make or because they're incumbent, and then other guys actually earn their job. That's what Darwin Thompson's done at this point. He was no more than the fourth or fifth best running back 3 months ago on this football team, and right now, I think he's the pretty clear-cut number two.
See, I actually think that's where the Devontae Freeman comparison continues. Devontae Freeman was a fourth-round pick. We think of him as being kind of an established player at this point. He wasn't thought of that way whenever he was brought into Atlanta. He was the number two back. They had signed Steven Jackson that offseason to kind of be their lead back. His first year in Atlanta, he only had 65 carries, and he ended up as more of a pass-catching back, which is what we all think that we're going to see this year from Darwin Thompson. He had 30 catches for 230 yards and a touchdown. I actually think that's pretty similar to what we should probably expect this year from Darwin Thompson. His second year is when he really took over, talking about Devontae Freeman, as the lead back down in Atlanta. He had 1,000 yards rushing and 550 yards through the air. I think that's what we're seeing, both from Mecole Hardman and Darwin Thompson. What we've seen this preseason is hugely optimistic. It makes me feel a lot better about what we have here in Kansas City and those two players compared to what we had expected. But I think it all says more about 2020 than what it says for this upcoming season. Their emergence is going to be really important next year, more so than this year.
Coming up in just a little bit, Phillip Rivers makes the case that he should be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I'll play it for you. Coming up, it's The Drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll tell you what Phillip Rivers had to say as he makes the claim for himself to be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And Baker Mayfield is, well, Baker Mayfield. We'll talk about that coming up in just a little bit. But college football, you guys might not know this. There is a real-life college football game this Saturday. Miami plays Florida in college football this Saturday. No preseason, no spring game. I'm talking to the Miami Hurricanes are playing the Florida Gators this Saturday in college football. It's here, my man.
He ain't lying. College football season is back. It's the perfect time to get caught up with the 435 Podcast Network. We have the True Sun Podcast with my guy BK. That's for the MU fans.
That's very right. Average podcast. Super average.
But if you like Mizzou, you know, it'll work.
Trash podcast.
We've got Faithful to Our Colors. That's a great one. With John Kurtz for K-State fans. And me, I'm hosting the new Mass Street podcast for all the Rock Chalkers out there. It's available now at 610sports.com and the 435 Podcast Network on the radio.com app. Check it out, C-Dub.
So I want to play this audio for you. This is Phillip Rivers. He went on the Dan Patrick Show. And they asked him who he thought was the best quarterback of all time. Want to play his answer for you guys because I thought his answer was very surprising. So here's Phillip Rivers on who the best quarterback of all time is.
To your point about the Super Bowl, I remember thinking when the Patriots beat the Seahawks, when they had the interception against the Seahawks down there on 4th-and-1, and that gave them, what, their fifth championship, right? Brady's fifth, I think.
Yeah.
You know, everybody said, well, he's now the greatest of all time. And I thought to myself, I already thought he was one of, right? I mean, how do you ever decide that? It's like the old Michael Jordan, right? We can talk about that forever, too. But I always thought he was already one of the greatest of all time. But because they intercepted the pass,
he's
now the greatest of all time. What if the Seahawks would have ran it in and the Seahawks would have won? Brady just played the exact same game. He didn't do anything different, you know, but it is funny how that works. So I don't look at that. That's why I always think Marino's right there in the mix too. All these guys, I mean, you can't just go off that. I don't think that you can, not in this sport especially.
Maybe this is a reach because you guys know I love my Phillip Rivers argument about him being in the Hall of Fame, and I don't think you guys give him nearly enough credit for how good he is. If he's making the argument that Dan Marino is in the conversation of greatest quarterback of all time, he's making it for himself because Dan is fantastic. But last time I checked, there ain't no silverware on his mantle. He ain't wearing no rings. He ain't got no jewelry. He ain't done a whole lot when it comes to winning championships. Very similar to our guy, Phillip Rivers. So the case for Marino is really a case for himself, right?
Yeah. That'd be like Andy Reid coming out there and being like, you know, Super Bowls are fun and they're good, but you don't need to win one to be considered. No, that's what people say when they don't have one. And right now, Andy Reid is the greatest coach ever to have not won a Super Bowl, and Phillip Rivers is the greatest quarterback playing right now to have never won a Super Bowl. It doesn't surprise me at all. He could have gone Elway. He could have gone Montana. Hell, he could have gone Favre, and I wouldn't have complained. He went with a quarterback that didn't win any Super Bowls. I get it. The stats are there. Dan Marino is an all-time great. But does anybody really believe, even that Philip Rivers really believes that Dan Marino is a better quarterback or even in the same stratosphere of Tom Brady. I thought that a few years ago we decided that that argument is over with and Tom Brady is not just the greatest quarterback but the greatest football player of all time.
Now, I understand the core of the argument that he is trying to make.
You do?
Like, about Kansas. We agree, if Mario Chalmers misses that shot, we evaluate Bill Self completely differently because he doesn't have a national championship. Like, if Self was still looking for his first national championship, how we feel about Self would be completely different. That part's just life, though. But he made the shot. But New England made the play, so we got the other ring. So I hear what you're saying. That's just the randomness of life. But it happened, and we can't take that away. And maybe you don't like the rules, but these are the rules that we all follow by. It makes you ineligible. Like, Charles Barkley is maybe a better player than David Robinson. He's maybe a better player than Tim Duncan. You have zero rings, so Tim Duncan is better than you are. I'm sorry. Now, once you get one, you can at least enter the conversation of it, but you at least got to get to the one. Rivers, you haven't even played in the one. Not got the one. You haven't even played for the one. I'm sorry. You're ineligible from this conversation. You can still go to the Hall of Fame without winning a Super Bowl, obviously. Dan Marino's in the Hall of Fame. There's other quarterbacks that are in the Hall of Fame without ever winning a championship. You just can't call yourself the best if you don't win a championship.
By the time that Seattle Super Bowl came around, correct me if I'm wrong, Tom Brady had already been to, what, four or five and already had three of them in the bank?
That is correct.
I don't think that that would have separated him either way. Now, I do understand the argument that maybe Tom Brady's record in the Super Bowl shouldn't be what it is based on the way that he's played. I could certainly entertain that argument. But the bottom line is, it's a team game. His team won those games. And I don't hear it the same way that you do, though. I don't think Philip Rivers is making an argument for himself. I think he's trying to make an argument for anybody, either now or going forward, that hasn't won a championship. Because is that the hill you really want to die on? Arguing against Tom Brady being the best quarterback of all time? That just doesn't make any sense.
We could just make the, well, what about argument for every team that wins a championship? Like, in theory, we can make that argument last year for the Patriots. What if D. Ford lines up onside? We can make that argument against the Kansas City Royals in 2015. What if Carlos Correa fields that ball? Like, we can, for every team that wins a championship, something happens that maybe is out of your control to help you win a championship. Again, that part is just life. The fact of that that's never happened for you, Philip Rivers, in 17 years of playing the position means you haven't put yourself in the situation for it to happen.
Maybe this is the year. I don't think so because of the Melvin Gordon situation. I don't think so because of the Derwin James situation. He's probably going to go down, C-Dot, as the best quarterback of this generation, not to win a Super Bowl. And I hear what you're saying. He's going to end up in the Hall of Fame because of his numbers. But it's tough to say that he's a first ballot Hall of Famer if he doesn't ever get that championship. And at this point, if you made me bet, I don't think Philip Rivers is ever going to win a title.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll catch up with Nate Taylor from The Athletic. He has a new 53-man roster projection. Speaking of multi-time Hall of Famer, winning rings and all that stuff, your guy, Mecole Hardman, you think if the Chiefs could go back, they would still draft Mecole Hardman?
I do, because the way that he's performed so far in training camp and the way that he's performed in the couple of preseason games, hell, this guy's turned into Chris Carter. All he does is catches touchdowns. Two games, two touchdowns, very limited time. I think if the Chiefs could jump in their hot tub time machine, C-Dot, they wouldn't change anything. Now, they'd change something about the draft. I don't think they'd go with Colin Saunders out of Western Illinois. They'd probably go back and draft a player they think they could help them more right now. But that's it. I think the rest of the draft would have gone exactly as it did, whether it was finding a running back out of Utah State. Darwin Thompson looks like he's going to get a lot of playing time in the fifth round, whether it's drafting Juan Thornhill, who's going to play right away. And even though Mecole Hardman at this point has become a luxury for this football team, because quite frankly, I don't know how the Chiefs are going to use him on the offensive side of the ball, do you think they'd rather have anybody else? At this point, I think they're very happy with the selection that they made, if not for 2019, for the future of Mecole Hardman in Chiefs uniform.
I don't want to bring up the position because you guys always get on me about this.
I think I know where you're going.
If they had a hot tub time machine to know that Tyreek Hill would not be suspended, I think they packaged the pick that they used to get Mecole Hardman and probably the pick they used to get Colin Saunders, and I think they go get a cornerback. I think they go get Greedy Williams. I don't know that. No one's told me that. But I think at the time they were thinking we are going to be without Tyreek Hill for a substantial amount of time. I think if they knew in April that he was going to miss zero games, at least due to what we thought he could miss games for, I just think they operate a little bit. I don't want to say that they panicked when it came to Mecole Hardman. I think they were worried about not being as explosive as they were last season and realized that's the only way we can win a championship is matching our level of being explosive last season. That's why I think they drafted Mecole Hardman. I'm with you. It is as much about the long term as the short term. I just think if they could go back and they have a more immediate need, which we can agree is the position I'm not going to bring up here, I think they trade the pick for Mecole Hardman and Colin Saunders to go get Greedy Williams.
I think that Hardman's exceeded expectations to the point where they're going to be forced to use him in some form or fashion on the field this year. I think it's going to be a lot like the way the Chiefs used Tyreek Hill his first year, where it's going to be a little bit of special teams. He's going to kind of get in where he fits in at wide receiver. Obviously, there's a lot of pass catching options in front of him. But the way that he's played so far, earning the playing time, he's been the talk, he's been the toast of the town, whether it was in St. Joe in the first couple of preseason games. I get it. It's luxury, not a need. Cornerback is a need, not a luxury. You're absolutely right about that. But this guy looks like he could become, in the future, not necessarily Tyreek Hill, but Tyreek Hill light. If you can get that guy in the second round, I don't think you go back on it, even if you could.
I want to read this text really quickly before we get to what Nate Taylor had to say from The Athletic. Text line 69306. Why do people always go back and forth on this topic? Even you guys just did it. You need a ring to be the best, but it is a team accomplishment. So which one is it, individual or team? I think it is impossible for you to be the best if you can't elevate your team to win a championship. The reason I think Kawhi Leonard is currently the best player in the NBA, because I just saw him individually carry a group of guys that we didn't think that much of to the highest point you can be in his – that's part of what makes you the best. Now, obviously, you got to dominate in the regular season. You have to put up consistency and all those kind of things. But part of being the best is that person's on my team, so I got a chance to win a championship with that player. Like, Charles Barkley never elevated his team to the point where you could win a championship, where Tim Duncan, didn't matter if you had David Robinson, didn't matter if you had Tony Parker or Manu Ginobili, like, you can win a championship if that guy is your best player. The fact that we think that Rivers, and I think this, has been a Hall of Fame quarterback for the last 15 years, and not one time has been able to elevate the play of his team and his roster and make guys better enough to at least play in the Super Bowl, is an indictment on Phillip Rivers. He's still a great player. But I just think that makes you ineligible for being the best if you can't elevate the play of guys around you to get to a championship.
And I think that's what Tom Brady has done better than any quarterback, hell, any player, any sport, any time, is made the players around him better than they actually are. Think about the revolving door that's been at the running back position since Tom Brady's been there. Think about the different wide receivers that that guy's had. The only real consistent thing on the offensive side of the ball was Rob Gronkowski, and now he's gone. So he's been able to play with this guy and that guy and this coordinator and that one. That's how we're going to start to judge Patrick Mahomes going forward. Not just how good are your stats, how many games do you win, but how much do you elevate the players around you.
Coming up in 2 minutes, Nate Taylor gave his new 53-man roster projection, and he has a shocking claim that I find a little bit hard to believe. I'll tell you what it is coming up. It's The Drive.
The Drive, 610 Sports Radio.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.